Daf Chof Aleph Amid Beis. And I'll tell you exactly where on the Amid we are. Here in the Sugya of Chanukah. Ad she'tichle regel min ashuk is the way the line begins, and that would be across from almost the end of Tosus De'i, or a little bit above the Tosus Vahamahadrin. So if you recall, we had a brisa that established that the time period for Chanukah is from Shkia Sachama until Ad she'tichle regel min ashuk. And the Gemara now wants to analyze, what does it mean Ad she'tichle regel min ashuk? What's taich? How do you interpret those words? Ad she'tichle regel min ashuk. There's no longer legs walking in the marketplace. So the Gemara says the following. V'ad kama, meaning l'chora, you know, there are periods of time in which there are many people in the shuk. There are other late times where there are less people in the shuk. You know, how do we establish tichle regel min ashuk? Omar Rabba Bar Chana, Omar Rab Yochanan, Adche Adikalia Rigla de Tarmidoi. Until the regel of the Tarmidoi are no longer out there in the marketplace. So we're going to ask two questions here. Number one, what is Tarmidoi? Who are these Tarmidoi? And number two, why did they determine the latest time for Ner Chanukah? If you recall, we said that according to at least one version in the Gemara, the Braisa meant to say that the latest time for lighting Ner Chanukah is Ad she'tichle regel min ashuk, which Gemara identifies with Tarmidoi. And Tosus Dibra Maskel De'i says Mikan V'elech, if you're about to light the candles after that time period, he says Lo Ya'acher Chos Ovar Zmana. So who are these Tarmidoi? So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says it's about 6-7 lines down from the top. Regel de Tarmidoi, Shame Uma. So Rabosai, if we translate Rashi literally, Shame Uma, as Tarmidoi is the name of a nation, and then I would ask you the following question, are they Jewish or are they not Jewish? What would be your answer?
They're not
Jewish. So it's very interesting that Rashi is already committed up front that the latest time for Ner Chanukah is determined by non-Jews. This is... We'll get back to this point. I want you to just let it sink into your brains because it's a very perplexing idea that when you're talking about publicizing a miracle, you want to determine the latest time by this Ummah, which is called Tarmidoi. Okay, now what's special about these Tarmidoi, this Ummah? So Rashi says that this Ummah was the expert in a certain field. It's like even today we talk about different cultures and different nationalities. You know, they used to say that the Germans were excellent at optics and lenses, or Filipinos are great at all sorts of caretaking. You know, they have special devotion. So these Tarmidoi, Rashi says, had their special discipline or their special occupation that they were. That's how they made their living. What was their job? They were malakte etzim dakim. They used to gather together small pieces of wood, like logs. Now, what would they do with logs in the old days? The smaller pieces, right? They used it for
starting the fire.
Yeah, keeping the fire going, right? Because they didn't have heating like we have today, so they had their local furnace or campfire, or whatever. And they had to feed. So imagine, this is one worker that you need very badly, or one seller, let's say, that you need very badly, because you have to keep during the cold winter nights, you have to keep the fire going. So you're going to go out to the shuk, and you're going to locate the stand, you know, the dalpak, they call it in modern Hebrew, of these tarmidoi, where they're selling eitzim dakim, the small eitzim. Now, until what point do these tarmidoim keep their geshef, you know, keep their business open? Misakvin b'shuk, they go late into the night, because, you know, you might find someone who thought he had an ample supply of wood for his campfire, and then all of a sudden he realizes, you know, I don't have enough wood. So here's an opportunity, like next door to where we are now, there's a 24/7 kind of place. It's called SOS, right? And the philosophy is that, you know, at some late hour, somebody might realize, oh, I ran out of eggs, or I ran out of milk, and I want to go buy. So they keep themselves open, and that's how they make a parnos. So the Tarmidoi made a calculation until what time on the clock, in a winter night, was it worth their while to keep the business open? Because somebody might still show up and come out to the market realizing that he ran short on fuel for his flame, and he would buy these eitzim dakim. So misakvim b'shuk, they would remain in the market ad shaholchim b'dei ashuk lebateim, until any possible client, b'dei ashuk means those who would buy in the marketplace, would remain out in the shuk, but afterwards holchim lebateim, they go home. Mishach hashecha, and it's light, it's dark out. So people would go out in the shuk because they realize it's dark, and we got to keep the you know, the heat going. But on the other end, the tarmidoi wouldn't remain in the shuk beyond an hour. That's late, you know. But it's just not worth it for them. They didn't have enough clients at that point. Umavirim bibatehem are, and when it's dark at night, they need the heat. Maybe it's not that cold, but they need it certainly for light. Rashi says. If at that point when it gets dark they realize they don't have enough eitzim to keep the fire going and to illuminate their homes, yotzim v'konamehem, they go out into the shuk and they purchase these eitzim dakim, these small pieces of wood. Okay, so let's now try to answer our two questions.
Was it necessary for Rashi to go into this
Okay, so again, our first question, if you remember, Reuven, was who cares about the Tarmidoi? Why are they the barometer for the latest time to light Ner Chanukah? So Rashi works overtime to try to understand what's the big deal about the Tarmidoi? Why is that the barometer for the end of Pirsum HaNes? So Rashi says the following, that people would go out into the shuk and buy these eitzim dakim in order to get light in their homes, and once it got dark, that would be the latest time for them to go out into the shuk, and they became aware of the fact that the light, you know, the light wasn't burning brightly. So the Tarmidoi would be misakev, Rashi says. They would delay and keep their stores open even after nightfall. It seems that all the other vendors would close shop with nightfall. You know, after nightfall, it's pitch black and dark. They didn't have light, you know, street lights and lamps like we have. So that people would not... But the last round of people would go out into the market to purchase things, Rashi says, and this is the latest time that they would go out into the market, were the people who, when it became dark, they realized that they need more logs for the campfire to get the light. So that's why the Tarmidoi would keep their vendors would stay, would delay and postpone their closed shop for a little bit of time into the darkness of the night. So this elaborate and very intricate description of Rashi, of what the Tarmidoi were doing, is meant to convey to us why the Tarmidoi become the barometers for Pirsum HaNes. You know, there's that, until what point are the people still going out into the market and they would see your Ner Chanukah? So that's called Atshe Tichle Regel Menashe. Now, many of you will know that I am a student of Rav Soloveitchik, and he did not publish very much in his lifetime. So most of the Torah, I would say, probably 98% of the Torah that we have from him is what you call an oral transmission, Torah Shebal Peh. However, what's happened over the course of decades, especially since he passed on, it went on a little bit during his lifetime, and he was not a happy camper at that. But mostly after he died, his students published his Torah based on what they heard. And that's what we call in the yeshiva world mipi ha-shmua. Have you ever heard that phrase? Mipi ha-shmua. Like, for example, a lot of Torah from Reb Chaim Brisker, all the Briskers were very hesitant to publish in their lifetime. So in any event, getting back to Rav Soloveitchik, one of the people, one of the individuals I happen to know quite well, who has made a major contribution in this area, is called Rav Michal Shurkin, and he published 4 volumes of Torah that he heard from Rav Soloveitchik called Harei Kedem. And he has 1 volume that's dedicated to Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and Chanukah, with a little bit on Purim. So in his piece on Chanukah, he quotes the following shtickle Torah, the following insight of Rav Soloveitchik. And what I would like to do is analyze with you whether or not, you know, this, again, keep in mind, Rav Soloveitchik didn't publish this. So you're getting it from an oral tradition. And the reason why Rav Soloveitchik did not publish is because whatever he said orally, that was in the context of a discussion in a classroom. It didn't mean that he was committed. So I would like to analyze with you this bombastic chiddush, which is published in the name of Rav Soloveitchik in a sefer called Harei Kedem, and perhaps what we call in Hebrew histaygut, meaning, you know, maybe I've reason to believe why Rav Soloveitchik himself would not have published this piece of Torah. Okay, having said that, so in other words, what I'm telling you is I'm gonna share with you the insight of the Harei Kedem, and at the same time I'm gonna be very critical about this. Okay, that's what I'm telling you.
Are you saying that he didn't say what?
No. I'm not questioning that he said it, but I'm telling you, if you would have asked Rav Soloveitchik in his lifetime, would you publish such a thing? I am Azariah Berzon. Again, Rav Shurkin will beat me up for saying this, but I'm telling you my opinion. Rav Soloveitchik would say, "Don't you even dream of publishing this, because this was not my final conclusion. This was something that I an idea that I wanted to investigate as a very exciting and intriguing chiddush and insight, but it was a chiddush. It's not meant to be published. Publishing for a Brisker, for a Soloveitchik, is a whole different category, because once you publish something, it's there. You know, Reb Chaim only published 1 sefer in his lifetime. Actually, it was published posthumously, but he wrote it. And Rav Soloveitchik told us about his grandfather, Reb Chaim, that he wrote it 6 different times. And every single time he changed what he said in the previous time. And he said the chaval were too bad that we don't have the first one, because he says the first of the 6 was the best. Because what Reb Chaim did was, afterwards he would cross out words he thought there were too many extra words. He wanted to be absolutely concise and abridged. So we don't really get the whole flavor of it. We just get... Anyway, so here's what it says in Harei Kedem. The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvos Aseh number 9, which is the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, says that if a non-Jew forces you to bow down to an idol, you have to give up your life. Right? It's one of the big 3. So far, no chidush. But here's where the Rambam goes a step further. The Rambam says that it's true that there's no heter of a chai bohem in the case of Avodah Zorah. So the severity of Avodah Zorah is such that you cannot, even for the sake of saving life, you cannot violate Avodah Zorah. But who's violating Avodah Zorah here? Why is he bowing down to the idol? Is it because he believes in the idol?
To save his life.
He's doing it because he has no choice. You know, it's life or it's either life and bow down to the idol, or death, you know, and don't bow down to the idol. So he's not motivated.
Doesn't it depend on this?
So wait a minute. So we're going to get to the Rambam's Chiddush. What you're saying now, Michael, you know only because of the Rambam. Even though you might not know of this Rambam, but trust me, whatever you're going to say is only because of this radical Chiddush of the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos. And the Rambam says the following. That even though the Gemara establishes in two places, in Sanhedrin and also in Masechta Avodah Zarah, that Avodah Zarah miyira is not Avodah Zarah, that technically if you worship an idol out of fear, but not because you really believe in the power of the idol, that's not on a full-fledged level. Again, there are different strata here, but it's not a real violation of Avodah Zarah. But nevertheless, says the Rambam, the guy who's forcing you, he believes that you made a choice, you made that decision, that you're going to worship this idol full-fledged, because that's more important to you than life. And that itself, says the Rambam, is enough for Kiddush Hashem. So the way the Rambam formulates it, this is what Rav Soloveitchik points out, and he makes this into a very dramatic Chiddush. Kiddush Hashem depends upon the mindset of whom? Not the Jew, because the Jew in his mindset, he's only doing it out of fear. He's not doing it because he believes it's an idol. When he says, Zekeli, you know, this is my God, he doesn't really mean that. But the guy believes it. And Rav Soloveitchik makes a big deal about this, that Kiddush Hashem depends upon the mindset of the guy. If the guy believes that it was worth it for you to accept the idol in order to spare your life, that itself, because the mindset of the guy, generates the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, and it's a matter of life and death here, because that's why you have to give up your life. So Rav Soloveitchik wants to bring a proof to the Rambam. Now, in order to understand the proof that he wants to bring, we have to understand his question. Rav Soloveitchik asks the following question. The Gemara establishes in Masechta Megillah that the Rabbanan cannot create new mitzvahs. If the Rabbanan come along and they create a new mitzvah, that would be a violation of a Doraisa. Which Doraisa? Baal Tosef. You're not allowed to add new mitzvahs. There are 613 and no more. So Rav Soloveitchik understands, the Gemara there is asking, how could the Chacham agree, this was Esther and Mordechai were pressing the Chacham to establish Purim. How could they... What's the word I'm looking for? Capitulate? No, that's not the word. Why did they give in? Why did they accept? So the way Rav Soloveitchik understands the Gemara, again, you have to be in a shir from Masechta Megillah, for that you have to come on Wednesday night. Anyway, so Rav Soloveitchik understands the Gemara, again, this is not the explicit translation of the Gemara, that the Rabbanon are authorized to create a mitzvah if that mitzvah is meaningful Doraisa. Okay, now let me give you a little brisker terminology. This is what's called a Maisa Mitzvah and a Kiyuma Mitzvah. The Chova, the obligation, is on the Maisa Mitzvah. But there's another entity called the Kiyuma Mitzvah. And sometimes there's a difference between the Maisa Mitzvah and the Kiyuma Mitzvah. So Rav Soloveitchik understands that the reason and the justification for the Chacham establishing Purim is that even though the Maisa Mitzvah is Derabbanan, and the Zmana Mitzvah is Derabbanan, whether it's Yudalit, Tesvav, but the Kiyuma Mitzvah is Doraisa. If the Kiyuma Mitzvah is Doraisa, because Megillus Esther is part of Tanakh, it's one of the 24 holy books of the Rit, therefore it's part of Talmud Torah. So when I hear Megillah reading on the 14th or 15th of Avadar, I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of Shinantam Levanecha, because Megillah says it's no worse than opening up a sefer of Treyasar and reading Treyasar. So again, let's just formulate this one more time. When the mitzvah in its external core, meaning the Maisa mitzvah, is the Rabbanan, but the Kiyum is Doraisa, then and only then the Chachamim are granted license to add a mitzvah to Rabbanan. So for example, Bikur Cholim or Nichma Velim is the Rabbanan. Why? Because the Kiyum Doraisa. What's the Kiyum Doraisa of Nichma Velim of Bikur Cholim? Excellent. V'haftal Recha Kamoch. So this is the pattern according to Rav Soloveitchik. The Rabbanan did not violate Baal Tosef when they're authorized. And when are they authorized to create a new mitzvah? That's only when that mitzvah has a kiyum d'orais. So Rav Soloveitchik therefore asks the following question. Nicha, I understand Kriya Samagil, you're reading part of Tanakh. That's a kiyum d'orisa of Vishinantul Vanecha. But Ner Chanukah, you're lighting candles. And with all due respect to lighting candles, P.S., there are a lot of other religions that light candles, right? So what makes that into a kiyum d'orisa? This is what bothered the mind of Rav Soloveitchik. So Rav Soloveitchik wanted to answer because of the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. Then when a Jew publicly announces and proclaims that God intervened in history to change the natural, normal course of events, that itself, that public declaration of the greatness of God and His intervention, His Hashkacha Pratis, in creating a miracle and changing the order of nature, that is a Kiddush Hashem. And Rav Soloveitchik wanted to say that now we have answers to two questions. Question number one, how could the Rabbanan establish Chanukah? What's the kiyum, the oraisa of Chanukah? Otherwise it's Paltosa. The answer is Kiddush Hashem. And question number two, who gives a hoot about the Tarmidoi? The Tarmidoi, Rashi says, is a shame of Umar. He identifies them as non-Jews. So they're the last ones in the marketplace. We're waiting for them to close the vendors. We're waiting for them to close shop. It means that when they see my Ner Chanukah, I'm still fulfilling the mitzvah of Pirsum HaNes. So Rabbi Bosa, imagine, I don't know, how many people living in Antarctica? Probably not too many. It's very harsh, right? So imagine you find yourself in Antarctica on Chanukah, and there's no one Jewish to be found. Would you be Makai in the midst of Pirsum HaNes? According to Rav Soloveitchik, what's the answer?
Yes.
If the kiyum is Kiddush Hashem, and Kiddush Hashem depends upon the mindset of the guy, if the guy sees you're there, again, don't ask me how he knows what you're there is all about, but that itself is Kiddush Hashem, you're Makai in the midst of Ner Chanukah on the North Pole. And the Raya, says Rav Soloveitchik, as quoted in Hare Kedem, I didn't hear it from him, is Tarmidoi.
With Raya Tarmidoi.
The proof to Rav Soloveitchik is from the Tarmidoi. That Rashi identifies the Tarmidoi as Shem Uma. It's another nation. Wow. And the fact that they still linger and procrastinate in the Shuk, even beyond nightfall, means I can still fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Why? Because the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is Pirsum HaNes. And Pirsum HaNes applies even if only the guy is aware of my Ner Chanukah. There's not one Jew there, but there's the Tarmidoi. And I say that Rav Soloveitchik would not have allowed this to be published. Why?
You say even if it's but he would agree that it's for Jews as well.
Yes, yes. Okay. But the radical chiddush is that Lu Yitzuyer, the last one in the shuk, who's going to see my Ner Chanukah is the Tarmidoi, because it takes the Tarmidoi some time to close shop. That itself is Pirsum HaNes. That's a kiyum of Ner Chanukah, and therefore that's a time that's appropriate for lighting the Ner Chanukah, Shetichle Regel Meshuk. Does anybody want to add one footnote here? This is not an Hari Kedem, but one critical comment. Yeah,
I'll say from the way I read Rashi, it's not the Hamadoi, it's the Yidden that are going back
exactly
there to get their
exactly. How does Rav Soloveitchik know that the Kiddush Hashem here is because of the Tarmidoi is only a barometer through which we can determine that there might be still Jews in the Shuk, because a Jew might be, you know, hard pressed, it's night time, you know, usually everything's closed and you don't go out to the dark nights, but he needs light for his fireplace, so he goes there because the Tarmidoi is there. It's not that the Kiddush Hashem is for the Tarmidoi. The Kiddush Hashem is for the Jews. So that's why I would submit to you, again, Rav Shurkin is going to be very upset with me, but that I don't think the Rav would publish this Torah, because again, when for a Soloveitchik to publish something, it's got to be ironclad, you know. If you look, for example, in the Brisker Rav, he uses a phrase over and over again. He'll write, Chazina mihocha, we see from this. And it's always a mathematical conclusion. It's ironclad. The greatest mathematicians in Lombus were the Soloveitchiks, because for them everything had to be mathematical. So it wasn't. So the Rav may have said this in a beautiful shir, and again, there's a lot of truth to what he says, but to prove it from Tarmidoi, as we say in Yiddish, das weisach nicht, meaning I don't know if there's a proof from the Talmud. Yeah, Ben?
Is there a place where Chazal describe the parameters of pirsum hanes, if it's to a Jew, a non-Jew, is it?
Nowhere to be found. It's right here in Rashi, shame uma, those two words in Rashi. But the question is, how do you interpret Rashi? Does Rashi mean that since the Tarmidoi will see your Ner Chanukah, that itself is a cue? Like, you know the famous story about the Jew who goes down to Virginia, down south in the United States, and he goes down, he's an Orthodox Jew, he's down there for work, I don't remember what field he's in, and it's getting close to Hanukkah time. Now, he took a job with a non-Jewish employer, and it's getting close to Hanukkah time. And he and his wife are getting very nervous because the employer doesn't know that he's Jewish. And not only that, his employer, his boss, lives across the street from him. There's just one, you know, small, what do you call it, mavar, you know, a street that separates his house from the house across the street. Do you remember the story? It's a very famous story. So his wife and him are discussing for weeks before Hanukkah, are they going to light near Hanukkah? Because if they do, then the boss is going to find out he's a Jew.
Why are they lying in the kitchen?
Correct. So maybe that was part of their deliberation. Will they light it near the window in the living room so that it could be seen, or should they light it in there? I don't, those details, Menachem, I can't tell you. Anyway, at the very last minute, they decided that they're going to do it. They're going to light near Hanukkah, and they, whatever the consequences are, they'll suffer the consequences. After he lights the near Hanukkah, his wife says to him, look how beautifully the Ner Chanukah is reflected. He says, no, that's not a reflection. The boss is lighting Ner Chanukah. Anyway, let's go on in the Gemara. And it says like this. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, this is one of the most famous prices, probably the most famous price in Chanukah. But perhaps even in Shas itself, it's one of the most, if not the most famous price. Tana Rabbanan, Mitzvahs Chanukah Ner Ish Ubesa Vamahadrin Lichol Ner Lichol Echad V'Echad Vamahadrin Mina Mahadrin. So you know those who buy, you know, in certain stores, because it says mahajrin, mina mahajrin, this is the source for it, but it doesn't, the Gemara is not referring to meat that's being sold in a butchery, it's referring to Ner Chanukah. It's Beit Shammai Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Shmona Mikan V'Elech Poches V'Holech Beisil Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Achas Mikan V'Elech Mosif V'Holech. So we're all very familiar with Beisil El, because that's how we paskin. And we're all Mahajrin, Bina Mahajrin, Baruch Hashem. So we all know that you light one candle on the first night, and it goes up and up and up, till you get to the eight candles on the eighth night. But many people are ignorant, and they don't know that Beit Shammai would have it the exact reverse. That if you want to be Mahajrin, Bina Mahajrin, you light eight candles on the first night, and then you go down. And the Gemara now is going to embark upon an entire analysis of this machlokas. And by the way, the Gemara doesn't seem to give any preference here, the Gemara doesn't seem to be emotionally in favor of Beis Hillel. The Gemara is just going to ask, what are the two opinions? Why does Beit Shammai say eight, and why does Beit Hillel say start with one? The Gemara is not prejudiced in either direction. You know, we're prejudiced. We think, oh, it's got to be, you know, if somebody would come to you today and say, well, I light eight, the dust of my minhag is to light eight candles on the first night, you'd probably throw him out of the Beis Medrash. You know, maybe you'd revoke his membership in the community. What are you doing like Beit Shammai? The Gemara says over and over again, Mishnah shall Beit Shammai lav Mishnah. You know, even though, again, the Bali Kabbalah say the loss of Lava will paskin like Beit Shammai, but we're not up to that yet. But there is Beit Shammai Shita, and the Gemara gives fair, you know, equal time to both Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel to try to understand why he says this. But before we get to that, which is Ula. That's the sugya of Ula. I want to just talk about the Braisa, because what we've read until now is just the language of the Braisa. So the Braisa says the following: Mitzvahs Ner Chanukah, Ner Ish Ubeisa. Now Rashi, in this particular case, kind of skirts the superficial level here. And he just points out, Rashi, which is about 10 lines down from the top, Ner Echad B'chol Laila. In other words, according to Rashi, the basic mitzvah, the nitty-gritty mitzvah, before we get into Mahajan, Imajan, Minimajan, is reflected in the number of candles. And what is that number? One. But at this point, again, I'm covering the rest of Rashi, so don't look to the next part of Rashi. But at this point in Rashi, he's missing a very important part of this price. The price doesn't just say ner echad. That's statement. Don't say ner echad. It says ner ish ubesam. So what does that word ubesam mean? So Rashi goes on and he says, V'ish v'chol b'nei beso sagile b'ner echad, that when the Braisa says beso, it's telling me nothing more than the fact that the head of the household will light one candle on behalf of
everybody,
the entire household. That's all it means. What I'm trying to tell you, Rabosa, is that Rashi sees ner ish ubeso, the word ubeso, in a technical light. And Rashi's saying that the beso is just indicating that despite the fact that there are many people living in that house, only one candle would be lit on behalf of all of them. So it's just like a technicality. The Pnei Yoshua, who lived about 2.5 centuries ago, he sees something really radical in the word ubeso that changes the whole nature of Ner Chanukah. And Rashi seems to have omitted it. And that is that the chiyuv, the obligation of Ner Chanukah, was established on the bais. It's almost like a communal obligation. We have communal obligations in Sibur, like you have Tefillas at Sibur, and you have Korban Sibur and Kodshim. There's a new concept of a Tzibur, of an entity that's an indivisible entity with regard to Chanukah, that's called Beso. And the Pnei Yoshua derives many conclusions from this. He assumes that, for example, if I can't make it on time home, let's say I'm one of the Bnei Abayis, I didn't get back on time for the Ner, for the Hadlokas HaNer, I was still Yotzei the Mitzvah. There's no individual obligation. It's an obligation on the... It's Ish Ubeso, meaning it's Ish only insofar as he's part of the Bayis. But he has no personal obligation. And we're going to hopefully, over the course of the sugya, we'll see all the ramifications of this breakthrough of the Pnei Yeshua. Rashi doesn't see it that way. Rashi thinks that the word Beso is simply telling you that one candle is enough, but each person has his own individual chiyuv. He's yotzi with that one candle. It's almost like Rashi's operating with the word, with the concept of shlichus. Right? The Gemara says in Masechta Kiddushin, shlucho shel adam kimboso. If I want to be Makadish and Ish, I can send you as my, appoint you as my agent, as my proxy, and shlucho shel adam kimboso, it's perfectly valid. So it doesn't mean at the level of the Ikara mitzvah that I have to personally fulfill the mitzvah. I can do it through a proxy. And all the Bnei Abayis are going to appoint one person, and he's going to actually implement the lighting on behalf of each and every one of us. But it's not the way that Pnei Yoshua bombastically says, no, the whole chiyuv evolves on the bayis as a bayis, but not on the individual. So Rashi is emphasizing the word ish, and the Pnei Yoshua would emphasize the word beso. And as Rashi is saying ish, every ish is chayav in Ner Chanukah, there's no reason why not. Every Isha, for that matter, too, as we'll soon see on Daf Dalin. But Ubeso means, as we'll soon see on Daf Chav Gimel. And Ubeso means that although each individual is obligated, but the entire bias could vicariously be in fulfillment of their mitzvah, of their chova, through the one single hadlok.
Is that what you based your comments on yesterday about lighting in a way before? Because it's
meaning that if you go with Rashi that it's Ish, that's an individual chiyuv, then I don't understand how the Pnei Yoshua could say, well, I could be Yotzei even if there's a hadlok on the bayis. So then, I know Ruvei was talking about his daughter's wedding, I don't remember all the details, but let's assume, I'm going to change the facts on the ground, so don't get nervous, Ruvei. But let's assume they made it into a public thing, and they banged on the table, and they said, everybody gather around at this wedding, and we're going to light Chanukah candles. So if that be the case, you know, you might possibly explain that in terms of the Pnei Yeshua, meaning in the light of this communal obligation, which is not individual, maybe we could all gather together. Now, the Pnei Yeshua himself, I think, would reject this because he'd say Beis Ob means that you share the same house. But if you go one step further than the Pnei Yeshua, maybe you could create a new definition of Beis Ob. By the way, there's a Rav in Gilo, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, Rav Schlesinger, who wrote an entire book on the laws of Chanukah. I'm trying to get access to it. I once owned it, but can't find it. What do you think he named his book? An entire book, hundreds of pages, just on Chanukah. Ner Yishuv Beis Ob. That's the name of his book, Ner Yishuv Beis Ob. He's the Rav here in Gilo, not far from here.
So may I ask?
Yeah, please.
If we say Ishto Zuv Beis Ob, how does Rashi
do this
for everybody in the family?
I think Ishto Zu Beis Ob is only on a Doraisa level, meaning if you see a pasuk in Chumash and it says Beis Ob, then you interpret it as Ishto. But when we're talking about a Raisa that's addressing not a pasuk in Chumash, then you know you have to say Ishto and you have to say Beis Ob, and they're two different concepts. Okay. So the base. How many candles would you need total? You know, to fulfill them, it's 8 candles. That's it, and you fulfill the basic.
Actually, it's 6
Yeah, we'll get. Well, again, I'm only up to this Gemara yet. The Shamash is coming around the corner, and we haven't got yet up to the Mahajan. So we're going to always have to calculate how many candles do we have to light. So the barest minimum of candles, if you want to fulfill the whole mitzvah, again, I'm assuming that each night of Hanukkah is a separate mitzvah. So even if I don't have 8 candles, I only have 1 candle, so I'll light the 1 candle. Maybe I'll get a miracle and I'll end up with 8 candles. So if I have 2 candles, I'll light another candle on the second night. But basically, if you have 8 candles, then the halacha would instruct you to light 1 candle every night. Don't even dream about the Mahadrin or the Mahadrin. Ein Sof and all this. We don't have the right to rely on a miracle. And what it means is that if I have 8 candles, I'll fulfill the basic mitzvah of Chanukah, because I lit 1 candle each night, and that's enough. And not only that, Rashi points out that even if there are other people in the house, they too will vicariously fulfill their mitzvah by me lighting that one single candle. And the question of shlichus here is a very fascinating one, because as a general rule, like for example, if I want to ask you to put on tefillin for me, can you be my shlich to wear tefillin? This would be really cool. No, we don't have to go to daven anymore. You be my shlich, you daven for me. Yeah, you wear the tefillin for me, you wear the tefillin for me. No, there's no shlichus in mitzvahs. You know, shlichus applies to what's called dinin. Dinin means like gittin, kiddushin, kinyanim, with the chalos kinyan. You know, then I can send you as a shlich. Well, afreshes truma, not as a mitzvah, but afreshes truma meaning to designate what goes to the kohen, and I make it into mom and kohen. You're my shliach. You could be mafresh truma on my behalf. But in the case of a mitzvah, and this is why the poskim deal with mila. I don't know if you know this. It became very popular now that the father does the mila, at least the chituk, the first part of the mila. Right? I was afraid. They gave me the thing. I gave it right back to him. I'm not messing around. You know, but it's quite popular now. And that's based on those posts who hold it. There's no shlichus in mitzvahs. There's no shlichus in milah. So why is it that in Chanukah I can send you as my shliach?
Because it's a whole different...
What's the difference here? The main word is going to be what?
Chefsa and Davra.
Well, okay, you're way ahead of me. I'm just okay. In the Braisa. Then you'll tell me Chefsa Gavra. But in the Braisa, which is the main word here? Beis Ob means that the bias has to be equipped with an Ner Chanukah. If you could be my shliach vis-a-vis the bias, and now Osher points out a Chefsa, then shlichus makes sense. But in the case of tefillin, for example, the mitzvah tefillin is not vis-a-vis the tefillin. It's my levisha. It's my hanacha. So I can't make you into a shliach. Or for example, lekachtem lachem. So I have to take a lulav. I can't appoint you to take the lulav for me because the mitzvah is the ma'aseh lekicha. But when the mitzvah is to set up something in a bias, for example, mezuzah, would there be shlichus in mezuzah? Yes, because in the case of mezuzah, it's a chovas bias. The bias has to be equipped with the mezuzah. So you could be my shliach to implement the ma'aseh mitzvah. In the case of Ner Chanukah, the Mishnah, the Braisa says, beso, that you have to equip the bias with a Ner Chanukah. and as far as we're concerned, one ner suffices, then you could be my shliach. So when Rashi says that one person is going to be madlik on behalf of all the Bnei Abayis, it makes sense. Rashi could be operating within the purview of shlichus, and shlichus works in this mitzvah because the mitzvah is vis-a-vis the Abayis. Who can think, now you have to put on your Pesach thinking caps, which we'll get to in 2 months in Mitzvah Shem, what mitzvah would, in, if you're learning the Sefer Pesach, would be a classical chovas bias where shlichus would operate?
Bedikah.
Exactly, bedikas chovas. So I can send you as my shliach to be bodek the house. And that's considered shlichus. Now, we mentioned mezuzah. Supposing I have a roof on my house. I buy a house with a roof, maybe even renting is enough to be mechayev me, and the roof is a slanted roof. So what mitzvah now kicks in? The mitzvah of makah. So now I have to put up a fence on my roof, and the question is, can I send a shliach? And by the way, there's a brach on makah.
Yeah, can you have a guy do it? Really,
oh, so that's the chiddush of the Machne Ephraim. The Machne Ephraim, who was a Sephardic Jew, his name was Navon, he lived about 2 centuries ago, he came up with a radical chiddush. I can have a guy build a fence around my roof. So everybody pounces on this Machne Ephraim, and they say, how can he say such a thing? You know, if I want to ask you to build a fence around my roof, that means that you're doing the mitzvah on my behalf. That's called Shlucho Shalom Kemoso. But Atem Galatem, L'Rabba Shalom, only a Jew can be your shliach. A guy is not a bar shlichus. So how could the Machne Ephraim have the audacity to say that it's enough that my Poalim Goyim can put up this fence on my behalf and I fulfill the mitzvah of Mach? Very big kasha on the Machne Ephraim. All right, we're not going to answer it now, Asher. We'll do this afterwards. But now we get to the Mahadran. Now, once we get to the Mahadran, we know that we're increasing the number of candles. But the question is, how are we increasing the number of candles? So it says, Ner l'chol echad v'echad. Ner l'chol echad v'echad. So what does that mean? Can anybody offer me 2 possible ways of interpreting Ner l'chol echad v'echad?
One for all of them.
It can't be one for all of them because we're up to the Mahadran now, right?
One for each day.
Well, wait a second. One for each day, then you're getting into the Mahadran. What I meant to ask you is the following. When you say that you're going to add candles because there are many people in the bias, is it the Balabais, I call them Balabais, don't quote me on this, it doesn't have to be the Balabais, but whoever is actually lighting, we'll call them the Baladloka, we'll call them, right, so the Madlik. Does the Madlik add the number of candles to reflect the number of people in the household? What's the other possibility?
Each one has light.
Exactly, that each member of the household should light his own candle. And it's a tremendous nafkamina, because if we go with the first approach, the same Reuven in that house is going to light all the candles. There are 5 members of the household who light 5 candles, but you haven't changed the Gavra, if you know what I'm saying. You know, the Mice of Mitzvah is still Reuven's exclusive Mice of Mitzvah, just that the Pirsum Anes now is that not only was one person saved from the Gzera of Achashverosh and Haman, but all 5 people were saved, and that's why I'm lighting 5 candles. Achashverosh. I mean, Haman was the one who influenced Achashverosh. Oh, I'm sorry. I got confused. You're right. What I meant to say is that the Gzera of the Ivanim, right, the Ivanim and the attack of the Ivanim against the Jewish people was for each member of the house. Thank you, Michael. I'm sorry. I'm learning 2 Masechta, so I sometimes...
This is the Machaber and the Ramah.
Exactly. The Ramah says that each person should be lighting his own candle. In the Sephardic community, and this is all based on the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch just reiterates the Rambam, says that the Madlik will add, for Mahajim, will add the number of candles to reflect the number of the people in the household, but it's only the Madlik. We're not getting more participation in the mitzvah. Whereas the Ramah says, no, that each member of the household will light his own candle. And the fascinating thing is that if Rashi in the Ikar Mitzvah, when we said Ner Yishu Beso, says that Beso means that each one of the members of the household will fulfill his mitzvah vicariously through the halakha of the Madlik, and we operated, if you remember, within the context of what principle? What is Rashi predicated on? That each member of the household, on the Ikra mitzvah, again, flashback to the Ikra mitzvah, right? That each member of the household could fulfill his mitzvah through one adlaka. What principle was Rashi operating with? Shlichus, correct? Oh, then the Ramah makes a lot of sense. What does the Ramah want to accomplish through the Mahadri?
Each person do it by himself.
Exactly. He wants to bracket what? Bracket Shlichus. In other words, I can send you as my shliach for certain mitzvahs.
Right.
But we have a principle called mitzvah bo yosef v'shlucha. It's the first sugya of the second chapter of Kiddushin. Mitzvah bo yosef v'shlucha. There are many mitzvahs that I can fulfill through, and that's why I told you before, even if I assume that shlichus is a possibility in Mila, I still want to learn Mila to circumcise my own son, because mitzvah bo yosef v'shlucha. Again, if all things are equal.
Yes, it's mitzvah gedola, right?
Right, so for example, mezuzah. Right, let's say I could send you to put up my mezuzah. And the truth is, I would fulfill my mitzvah mezuzah. But mitzvah bo, yosef v'shlucha. That's a heder mitzvah, where I have the option of sending you as my proxy, and instead I opt to do the mitzvah myself. The extra tircha indicates a chavivus ha-mitzvah, that I love the mitzvah, therefore I don't want to give it away. I want to do it myself. The Gemara says above a comment that if you steal my mitzvah, then you have to pay me for that compensation. So we see that a person should be eager to do the mitzvah himself. But the machaber is not like that. The machaber holds that the heder mitzvah has to reflect itself in the one single hadlaka. If the hadlaka expands from one ner to another ner to another ner, that is a beautification of the mitzvah, because now we see how great this miracle was. Each individual was saved, again, not from Ahasuerus, but from the Ivanim. And that itself increases and enhances the Kiddush Hashem. That's the heder mitzvah. The Rambam says, no. The heder mitzvah has nothing to do with expanding the number of people who are being makadish, that the hadlaka reflects the expanded number of people who are experiencing the Yeshua and the Hatzolah. But rather, what we're doing is we're taking shlucho shel adam kemoso and we're putting it in the back burners. So we're saying, yeah, I can be yotzei through shlichus, but I'm not going to allow that to happen. I want to have my personal physical involvement in implementing the mitzvah, because mitzvah bo yosef v'shlucho.
And you say it's based on every single person that was saved from the Iranian. So what about women and children? If there are five people in the house, including women and children, like for each of them...
Women, for sure, yes. Children is going to be an issue. Why? Because it could be... Let's take the Ramah's opinion, and then we'll get back to the Machaber. Your question's on the Machaber, but let's go Minakala Lakovit, from the easier one. In the Ramah's frame of reference, then... Who's ever obligated in the mitzvah of Lukas Ner Chanukah and wants to bracket shlichus, he will personally be involved in lighting the candles. So who's obligated in the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? The men and the women. The children are not obligated. Now, when I say the children aren't obligated, that itself is a complicated business, because there's something called chinuch. Right, when a child reaches a certain maturity, a certain age level, he's got to fulfill the mitzvah. So
it's not a mitzvah, I say she's not a
mitzvah. Oh, so that's the Gemara's kasha. Why is a woman obligated in Ner Chanukah? After all, right? After all, it's a mitzvah seishas man groma. So the Gemara answers the famous principle: Af hein hayu ba'osa nes. Okay, that's going to be a gigantic sugya unto itself. So in the Ramah's frame of reference, everything is crystal clear. The number of candles will reflect the number of people who are obligated in the mitzvah, because each one is going to light his own candle, and he's going to obviate the reliance on shlichus. He's going to do it the right way, the perfect way, the heder way of mitzvah bo yosef v'shlucho. It means that the husband is going to light, and if there are any boys who are obligated or girls who are obligated, boys past 13, girls past the age of 12, and the wife is going to light. Again, we'll have to see about the wife, because there may be a din of mitzvah of what's called ishto kegufo, but theoretically the women should also be lighting and the wife should also light. As far as the children are concerned, the children are not obligated and therefore they're not going to light. If on the other hand the children are chayav midin chinuch, then you could ask the following question: does hider mitzvah apply to chinuch? How far did the Rabbanan go when they established chinuch? Yeah, Ruben?
How do you come about that Ashkenazi would follow the Chaver and started the Ramah on this?
No, the Ramah says that each person should light. What's your minute? Does each person light?
Yes.
Oh, so you're following the Ramah. My guess is that you might be Ashkenazi. And judging by your last name, yeah, good.
By the Rambam.
Right, so the Sfaradim will have one person light because the Rambam broke new ground, and he says the Mahadran means that the one Adlaka should reflect the number of people in the household. And the Mechaber Paskins like the Rambam, and that's the minhag of, again, not all Sfaradim, some Sfaradim
have the number of nines.
Oh no, that's the Mahajan Mina Mahajan. So we're not up to that yet. There's going to be a gigantic machlokas, right? But I'm up to Mahajan. You guys are already ahead of me, as you always are. I'm always lagging a little bit behind. Now, the Mefarshim are baffled as to why the Gemara in Chanukah goes through Hider Mitzvah, not only Hider Mitzvah, but Hider on top of Hider. And we don't find this. Basically, the law of Hider Mitzvah, which is derived from a pasuk in Bishalach, which pasuk? Zekeli v'anveu, excellent Michael, Zekeli v'anveu. The Gemara has a general brisa. And the brisa says, you know what, buy a beautiful pair of a beautiful talis and a beautiful pair of tefillin, and a sefer Torah should be beautiful. And that's called Zekeli v'anveu. But we don't find that the Gemara can, as the Gemara uses the phrase, has to go through every single mitzvah and tell you exactly how to be mahada the mitzvah. And not only that, in the case of Chanukah, not only the Gemara asks how to be mahada the mitzvah, but the Gemara told you how to go through mahajim mina mahajim. Very strange. Do you empathize with my question here?
Especially since it's a Darabana, not a Daraisa.
That even makes it worse. You're ever with Daraisa. All right, tell me how to be Mahad. Maybe I'm confused. How do I beautify it? So you heard of the Beis HaLevi. That was my Rebbe's great-grandfather, Rabbi Yoshe Ber. The same exact name as my Rebbe, Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitch. He was the Rav in Briz. And he suggests that in Chanukah, Hider Mitzvah plays a major role. And it's almost, again, let's not go too far, but it's almost as if we're obligated to be mahadir this mitzvah, which we don't find in other mitzvahs, an obligation to be mahadir the mitzvah. And he bases himself on a sugyan kudshim. You know, the briskers are heavy into kudshim. So in kudshim, there's a principle called tumah hucha b'tzibur. That means for the sake of a mitzvah satzibur, like in kudshim, it's a classical case would be a karban tzibur, then we will override the laws of Tumah. So for example, what would be on the 14th of Nisan when they brought the Karban Pesach if most of the Tzibur are Tmeim? For any other Karban, let's say for example, if I am a Chayav and a Karban, Chatos or Noshim and Ola, I will not bring it to Tumah. But in this case, for the sake of the Tzibur, we'll override the laws of Tumah. We'll actually bring a lamb on the Mizbeach that's Tumah. I mean, that's antithetical to Mizbeach, to Kodshim. But Tumah Hucha B'Tzibur. Says the Beis HaLevi, based on that principle, what happened? The Jewish people found a Pach HaShemen, as we'll learn very soon on this Amud, and it was definitely tahar, right? It was locked up a chos moshel kohen gadol, and it was, says the Beis HaLevi, what did they need this whole miracle for? Why not just bring shemen tamei? Even though you're not allowed to be madlik the menorah and the mikdash with shemen tamei, but tumah hucha b'tzibur. And if the tzibur of klal yisur were tmeim, and if all the shmonim that they found were tmeim, there's no reason for them to turn over shamayim ve'aretz and seek out Shemen Tar. They knew that all the Shemen was Tameh until they found this Pacha Shemen. What did they need it for? Says the Beis HaLevi, the entire miracle of Purim, I'm sorry, of Chanukah, and of the Pach HaShemen is all based on Hidur Mitzvah. What does it mean? That even though technically they could have brought the Shemen Tomei, they could have used it for the lighting of the candelabra, but nevertheless they wanted to be Mahadur the Mitzvah. Here was the opportunity after the Avonim of Etamei, everything in the Heichal, to find perhaps Shemen Tar. Again, in a fallback position, had they not succeeded in finding, locating the Pach HaShem, they would have definitely, says the Beis Halevi, brought Shemen Tomei. But they pushed, and they pushed. Their agenda was Mahadrim. Zekei V'Aveilu, this is a glorious moment in Jewish history. We want to recognize the great miracle, and we want to be able to fulfill this mitzvah of Ner, Shebemigdash, Valoscha, Sanderos, in the most perfect way that we possibly can. And therefore Hashem brought about a miracle that they would discover this one Pach HaShemen, and they would make the mitzvah of the Hidur. So you'll ask me, where's the Hidur mitzvah? It's a Pach HaShemen Tar. And that's exactly the obligation of the mitzvah. That's not Hidur mitzvah. The answer is, it's a Hidur mitzvah because they didn't need a Pach HaShemen Tar. They could have fulfilled the same mitzvah with a Pach HaShemen Tomei based on the principle of Tumah Hudra Mitzivah. But they fulfilled the mitzvah through Hidur mitzvah, the most beautiful way. Says the Beis HaLevi, since the entire miracle came about in order to facilitate the Hidur mitzvah, therefore, in this mitzvah, in a very singled out, in this mitzvah, unique way, there's an inyan of Hidur mitzvah. And not only that, he says, Mahajun mina Mahajun. We want to go even a step further. It's only a b'di'evit because we couldn't find tar. If we found tar, we would definitely not be able to implement and activate this principle. And here, since it was all Tomei, why were they seeking and searching for Torah? But they wanted to be Mahadur the Mitzvah. Hidur Mitzvah is the greatest expression of Chavivus HaMitzvah, the love that a person has to have for the Mitzvah. So, Moshe, in order to wrap up the Shia, because we're running out of time, let's just mention Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. And in the sequence, the Gemara mentions Beit Shammai first. Beit Shammai says the following, that we start with 8 candles. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Ula, Pli Batreit Amoroi B'Marofa. In Eretz Yisrael, there were 2 versions, or 2 explanations, for the machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. The first version is Rav Yossi Bar Ovin, and the second is Rav Yossi Bar Zvida. So there are 2 commonalities here. They both are Rav Yossi's, and they're both coming to explain the machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai about Mahajim and Mahajim. From here, they part ways. Chad, we don't know who says what, but Chad, one of them, Omar, Taimed Beit Shammai keneged Yomin HaNichnosim, veTaimed Beis Hillel keneged Yomin HaYotzim. Which means that if you ask me how many Yomim are Yomim HaNichnosim, meaning how many days are going to, you know, I already anticipate how many days of Hanukkah I have to light the menorah for, and the answer is 8. So already now I'm anticipating the Yom HaNichnosim. The Yom HaNichnosim go from 8 down to 7, etc., etc. Beis Hillel says keneged Yom HaYotzim, the days that passed, and tonight is the first night of Hanukkah, so one night of Hanukkah requires 1 candle. Again, we're going to have to spend a lot of time trying to figure this out and what it's all about. Chad Omar, but the other Rav Yossi, Taimed the Beit Shammai Kedeged Pari Achag, V'Taimed the Beis Hillel, the Mailin V'Kodesh, V'Ein Morid. Now, we have a universal principle called Mailin V'Kodesh, that in any mitzvah we go up, we don't go down. So Beis Hillel says, therefore we should go from 1, climbing all the way up to 8. Does Beit Shammai reject this? So the Mefarshim say Beit Shammai also accepts this universal principle that applies all over Shas of Ma'ala V'Kodesh, but here's the exception to the rule. Because Beit Shammai hold that we have to indicate something that would reflect Pari Achag. So we know that on Sukkos, the number of Parim, of cows that they brought, would go down. Right? What was the first number? It was 14?
13.
So it goes that all the way down from 13 to 7. And the Hanukkah also has to go down in the same way. What's this all about? Who cares about Pari Makesh? Pari Achag. Okay, Rabbi Moshe, so here's where we're going to stop. So, Mr. Shem, our agenda for tomorrow is Mahajun Mina Mahajun. So, bring in your favorite to Hechsher, to Shir, as the show and tell.
I heard a shout on Beit Shammai, and he connects it more to the victory of the Yavanim that our enemies should be diminished.
Okay. Taking away my share for tomorrow. You know who said that? 150 years ago was like some soap. But let's leave it for tomorrow. So I'll have something to give you tomorrow. Okay, Ruben?
11:45.
Today is at 11:45. What's today? Monday, right?
Tuesday we have cheer at 7:30.
On
in the morning. At night.
Right. Tuesday I have 7:30 and then 8:30. 7:30 is we're learning Musar. It's a sefer called Pelioy. It's fascinating sugya. We're gonna talk about the love of a husband for his wife. and a wife for a husband. At 8:30 we talk about Parsha. I hope to be able to. Shlomo, let me know if you're looking for a chavrusa in the middle thing to bridge
yeah,
over.
I told you that.
Yeah, oh, it's still the same. Okay.